the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. It's okay, Angela Ellis.
We can talk.
It's all right. Angela just said, I haven't done the most in so long. Angela, let me remind you what it is and where we are. It's NPR, Bryant Park Project. And we have this thing where we looked at the most emailed, most viewed, and most listed stories on the web. Today, they consist of pink dogs, pimped out cats, and three whole new reasons you might need to go to confession. It's the most. Ian will go first. He'll be our example.
Okay. I thought it was unselected shorts. So this is the number two most emailed from the Denver Post. Headline, Boulder says no to pink poodle. So this woman, this hairdresser in Boulder, which is one of my favorite places in the world, for reasons like this, this hairdresser has received a $1,000 citation from an animal control officer because she colored her white poodle named Cece pink. She used beet juice, and because it's Boulder, she used organic beet juice.
Okay.
It doesn't get any better. I mean, it doesn't get any benign than beet juice.
It does not. And she's a breast cancer awareness advocate, and so she has this pink dog. She dyes it once a week, and people say, hey, why is your dog pink? And she says, well, let me tell you about the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. They asked for donations. She says she's generated a lot of money to donate to breast cancer awareness. But Boulder, 5 years ago, put a law on the books, you can't dye your pet. And they put it on because people were dyeing their rabbits and chicks around Easter. Mm. It was cute but weird. It's not supposed to bring down poodles like Cece, but it did. And apparently a couple people had called animal control and said, look, this lady's got a pink dog. You got to do something about it. Boulder cops are not busy.
They are not busy, exactly.
Breaking the law.
Nothing else to do.
All right, Angela Ellis coming in this morning. Usually Angela's on our late shift, but helping us out today.
Early for the number one from the San Francisco Chronicle. Mm-hmm. We go from pink dogs to cats and from Boulder to Tokyo, where there are apparently at least 3 cat tea houses in the greater Tokyo area. One of them is called Cat Cafe Calicos. And they have 14 calico cats where basically they just kind of mill about and purr and sleep while people have tea. And it costs $7 an hour, or you can get a 3-hour package for $20 where you enter this large room, 14 calicos are slumbering and doing whatnot. And it's up to the cats, of course, if they want to come over to you or lounge on you or whatever. It's like the cat initiates the contact. You don't contact the cat.
Kind of like match.com/feline.
Right. And apparently this is important in Tokyo because there are tight housing regulations where you can't really own cats. Mm. So if you want the comfort of a feline, you can go to a tea house.
What could this possibly mean?
Well, it's cat therapy. It's feline therapy.
Okay. My most is the most popular at CNN. Vatican lists new sinful behaviors. It was at number 8 this morning. Apparently, in the Daily Vatican newspaper, they listed 3 additional new sins. Now, they're not deadly sins. They're not to be added to the lust, greed, gluttony, sloth, wrath, envy, pride list. These are the venial sins, which you can kind of, get a pass on. But they are pollution, drugs, and genetic manipulation.
Sign of the times.
So if you're engaged in any of those, confession for you.
Confession.
Trisha.
Hey. Checking the Google Trends at number 6 overnight. Moved up to number 3. Everything else on the list had to do with Elliot Spitzer, but the one thing that wasn't Elliot Spitzer was Leaves of Grass. And I thought, Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass made Google Trends? And it's because the Googlers like to watch TV, specifically Fox. So last night there was an episode of a show called New Amsterdam. And it is so high concept. I'm just going to read you a little snippet of what this show is about. In 1642, John Amsterdam, then a Dutch soldier in the colony of New Amsterdam, later to become New York City, stepped in front of a sword to save the life of a Native American girl during a massacre of her indigenous tribe. The girl in turn rescued Amsterdam, weaving an ancient spell that conferred immortality upon him. Amsterdam will not age, she told him, until he finds his one true love. And then he becomes a New York City police detective.
That makes perfect sense.
An immortal Dutch police.
So, so this episode, he's investigating the murder of a psychiatrist that may have something to do with post-traumatic stress disorder, which, of course, leads this guy to flash back to his time as a surgeon during the Civil War. And he worked with an assistant who then hands him something, and the assistant turns out to be Walt Whitman. Let's just play a clip of this.
I've written something. Published it myself.
Thank you.
So now we flash forward to the future.
Leaves of grass.
Flash forward to the future.
What are you grinning about?
Remembering an old friend. Gave me a copy of his book. He's worth some money these days.
Somebody we heard of?
He used to be famous.
And
in
his
the
name?
Future, who knows?
His name is Bill Clinton. Never mind.
That's a different story.
That's a different.
So anyway, that's
appointment viewing.
My new favorite show.
All right, Rachel.
Okay, mine is the number 10 most emailed on the BBC.com. It requires a musical accompaniment, please. That's right. The national anthem, God Save the Queen of the United Kingdom. There's apparently a specific lyric in the sixth verse of God Save the Queen, which kind of slams the Scottish people. And the Scottish people are not so happy about this. It's a very infrequently sung sixth verse, probably because it slams the Scots. It goes like this. It's talking about someone named Marshal George Wade, a British military officer who was sent to quell rebellious Scottish Highlanders in the wake of the Jacobite Rising of 1715. The verse goes something like this. Lord, grant that Marshal Wade may be thy mighty aid victory bring. May he sedition hush and like a torrent rush rebellious Scots to crush.
That's a load of crap.
That's a load of crap, and the Scots don't like it one bit, and they're asking that...
I got my kilt all in twist.
They want the British government to revisit this and perhaps excise that line. So that provoked me to go look at our own Star Spangled Banner to make sure that we didn't slam anyone, which we don't. They should have written it as we did, which is just to say things like foe and enemy instead of actually naming, because your enemies become your friends one day after you colonize them.
Scots don't forget anything, do they?
No, they don't.
Goodness gracious.
And no. Matthew Martinez, you're going to bring it on home back to the mothership.
I'm going to bring it on home. I have one of the most emailed stories at npr.org right now. It is number 5 on the list. It's a story by NPR's religion correspondent, Barbara Bradley Haggerty. And it's about this new kind of Sunday school in Virginia where families of different religions, they get together and they teach virtues to their kids.
I love this. This looks...
Yeah. Here's Barbara's story.
Sunday school at the Miller Moreau's house is not what you would call typical.
Hey, Gil. Can you manage the pillow fight? I'm not sure that's a great idea.
Welcome to the Virtues class, where 8 rambunctious children between ages 3 and 6 have gathered with their parents to learn about obedience and service and friendliness. Laylee Miller Moreau says there's so much pressure on young kids today, the push to read earlier and to get into the best schools, that spiritual education falls by the wayside.
We want them to succeed in society, not only materially, but also spiritually. We want them to contribute and be good people, and there's not a whole lot of training out there for that.
And so last September, Laylee and her husband Gil, who are Baha'is, went to the religious community and asked them to sponsor a virtues class. In the past decade, about 900 such classes have sprung up nationwide. They're based on the central Baha'i tenet that all religions are different, but come from the same source. Gil says the couple then asked their friends if they'd be interested.
When we proposed this idea to them, they said that that was something that they would love to do too. So we realized that we had a critical mass and it was time to get started.
Okay, let's start. Tap, tap, tap. Is Tatton here today? Is Tatton here today? Oh, yes, he
kids and parents sit on the living room floor. They're from Muslim, Jewish, Protestant, Unitarian Universalist, and Greek Orthodox backgrounds. Rachel Galoob Ortega, who's Jewish, says she wants her son to become familiar with and to accept all religions.
I really want Luca to have, when he grows up, is when someone says, I'm Baha'i, I'm a Zoroastrian, I'm whatever they say. If he doesn't know, for him to say, well, tell me about that.
And so Laylee does. She gathers the children around the dining room table, each with a little lampshade.
Remember how last time we talked about how religions are a lot like lampshades? They might look different, but they all have the light of God inside of them.
The kids glue symbols of various religions onto the shades. A cross, a Buddhist wheel, a star and crescent for Islam.
Everybody who finishes their lampshade, come over to the light and we'll practice putting it on the light, the lamp, okay?
After they've come to the light, Layla turns to the virtues. She starts by asking about last week's lesson.
Did anyone exhibit contentment this week? No? Not you. But we're good at honesty.
Each week, they learn a different virtue. They studied justice for the Martin Luther King holiday. For service, they made chocolate chip cookies and delivered them to a retirement home. Mimi Alamayo says she came to the class after she had an epiphany a year ago about her son, Jacob. They were visiting family in Ethiopia and saw some children begging.
And I was telling him, you know, these kids don't have any food and don't have anything. And he said to me, Mommy, I think you need to tell their mommies where Whole Foods is. I said, oh my God, then I really have a lot of work to do.
Hi, do you have something to say to me?
My favorite virtue is TVs.
Actually, TV is not on the list of virtues, but helpfulness is.
You want to be my partner? Come on, partner!
To illustrate helpfulness, the children take turns guiding each other blindfolded around obstacles in the room. Some are more helpful than others. So, do the virtues stick? Shazia Philipson thinks so, especially when she receives an occasional lecture from her daughter, Serena.
And it's things like patience. In the car, I'm driving, she'll say, Mommy, you have to be patient.
And they've been so patient, waiting for the highlight of the class, Cowboy Hay. Gil Miller Moreau's stepfather strides into the room, sporting a long white beard, a hillbilly hat, and a banjo.
Won't you come and join us in our quest for unity?
The parents collapse into comfortable chairs as Cowboy Hay and his young virtuosos sing about unity in the complex future they face.
That's NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty with one of the most emailed stories on NPR.org. You can find links to all the stories you heard on the most on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.